Dov Zakheim is a senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, former comptroller at the Department of Defense, and a member of the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission. Dov, it's terrific to talk to you. As always, the Comp Commission's recommendations, at least 10 of them, have been endorsed by the White House and the Department of Defense. Congressman Mac Thornberry, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, has made sure that some of them are incorporated into their markup of the National Defense Authorization Act, but in neither case are all 15 recommendations included. Is it, in your view, an all or nothing that some of them won't make any impact unless all of them are implemented, or is this a good first step in your view? Thanks for joining me, Dov.
Sure. Pleasure to be with you again. You know, it's a tough call because after all said and done, if you say all or nothing, then you're fighting against the realities both on Capitol Hill and in the administration. On the other hand, if you turn around and say, well, you know, I'll compromise, that's not a good thing either because so many of our recommendations really hang together. And so, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about, so our recommendations regarding retirement, we have a proposal in there for continuation pay that begins at the 12th year. That ties very much in with our proposals regarding transferability of GI Bill benefits, which we have recommended should actually go into force at the 10th year. We propose, by the way, getting rid of the Montgomery GI Bill, just sunsetting that and sunsetting the current reserve equivalent, which is the REAP program. And we say, look, the 9/11 program has transferability, but the difference is that instead of being in the military 6 years and then committing to another four, we say be in at 10 and then commit for two more. Once you've committed to 12, the continuation pay, which is a totally different, supposedly totally different recommendation, now kicks in. You now have to commit for four more years. Now you're in 16, and of course, the likelihood you stay for 20 is very, very high. So this is just one example, and we've got several of them, of how these things all hang together. And so, by definition, if you just sort of cherry pick, then the other recommendations, which we have constantly argued are a complete package, are now in jeopardy. Now, in some cases, the Department of Defense, for example, is saying they're going to respond in July, for example, on the retirement issue, although Congress is moving ahead. We proposed reducing the number of reserve component statuses from 30 to 6. The department says, well, give us until July for that. And then there's also a recommendation that we've made where there's a report to Congress on the commissaries. We've recommended, as you probably know, that the back office operations should really be combined between the exchanges and the commissaries, create a new office called DERA, the Defense Resale Activity. Nothing to do with upfront. You go to the commissary, you go to the exchange. That doesn't change. We're not affecting the morale welfare programs that the services care about. Just the back office stuff, and you'll save money. There's a report that DOD is going to give Congress in September, so nobody wants to move on that. So you've got some delays built in. You don't have overt opposition. There's very, very little overt opposition. But, you know, if some of these things are dropped, we'll feel that there's something missing.
Maybe it's just me, but I'm struck by the rapidity at which the administration and the HASC got on this, I have to be honest, Dov. I mean, you've been involved both in participating in commissions like this before and receiving the results of commissions like this before. And I can't remember the last time that the response to something like this was so rapid.
Well, I mean, we're gratified in that regard, no question. I think from the president on down in the executive branch, and clearly both chairman and ranking members and all the members, really, of the Armed Services Committees, have made it clear that they think there's just, this is the time for reform. There's no question that the whole thing was started essentially by a desire to save money. We came in with a totally different approach. What we said is, this is a very different kind of military from the military that maintained during the inauguration of the all-volunteer force. It's a military of families. It's a military where you can have both spouses are service members. Therefore, some of the benefits have become really, really important. Child care, for example, education, for example. And so it's just time for a change. We're not, and we're in the 21st century. We're dealing with some programs that are decades upon decades old. We want to maintain what is everybody agrees is the best fighting force in the world. We want to recruit them. We want to retain them, and we want them to have the kind of morale that'll get them out there and do what they need to do. Well, that calls for change, and I think everyone has recognized that. So we approached it from that perspective. And it was only once we agreed upon what needs to be done that we actually costed it all out. And we do save some money, but we save money because of efficiencies. We don't save money because of cuts. It's a very big difference.
Dov Zakheim of the Center for Strategic and International Studies was a member of the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission and former comptroller at the Department of Defense. And you and I talked a little bit offline before we went on the air, and I'm going to advocate this week in my commentary on federalnewsradio.com for a civilian equivalent to this comp commission, because I'll take off my objective journalist hat for a second. I think the work that was done here was done in exactly the right way to suit the goals that you were and your colleagues were trying to reach. And I would like to see something of the same type, not a carbon copy, but something of the same type done to add some potential certainty for the civilian workforce, not just at DOD, but all across the federal government, Dov. If you were setting that up, if you were going to create that, how would you apply the concepts that you applied to the military, to the uniformed military personnel's compensation system, to the civilian compensation system, to the civilian workforce stuff?
Well, I think the very first thing you have to do is get a group of people together who will leave partisanship at the front door. One of the interesting, fascinating to me things about the commission that I'm on right now, after all said and done, some were appointed by Republicans, some by Democrats, some by the President, some by Speaker of the House, and the majority and minority leaders of Senate, and so on. You wouldn't know anything about partisanship if you listened into our meetings, our discussions. It just doesn't play. What everyone wants to do is exactly what I said a moment ago, which is enhance the benefits for the 21st century sailor, soldier, airman, marine, Coast Guardsman. That's what we're trying to do. Make it relevant, make it meaningful, and ensure that we still have the best force in the world. That should be principle number one if you put together a commission for civilians as well. No partisanship here. Leave it at the door. Look at what is it going to take to have a top-flight civil service. That's number one. Number two is, again, you've got to modernize. This was the mantra that we have on our commission, modernization. You've got to look at what is underlying the current civil service system. It is still very much the Civil Service Act of 1883, and Chester Allen Arthur has not been president for quite a few years. And so we have to look at, are we educating our civilians the right way? I mean, it's a very good, you know, it's interesting. With our health proposals for the current commission, we looked at the FEHBP, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan, and we adopted some elements of that because it really gives more choice to the military member. Well, you ought to look, if you're going to have a civilian commission, you should look in the other direction. Look at how the military has a rigorous system of professional military education. By the way, it's not exclusive to the military. Lawyers have to have this. Doctors have to have this. Physicians' assistants have to have this. You don't have the same rigor and the same educational requirements for promotion in the civil service. Now, particularly given the kind of technologies we've got and Moore's Law and how things change literally on an annual basis, Does it make sense for someone to be in the civil service, particularly in anything to do with technology, and not have refreshers every few years? So, you know, I think there are things that the civilians can actually pick up from the military system. So that's a second principle. Look around. Where are the best practices? Are they in industry? Are they elsewhere in government? Are they in the military? And so on. I think those ought to be two major principles.
Dov, that's where we'll leave it. I'm grateful for your time today. It's always terrific to have you on the program.